Forensic Psychology is a podcast that provides an illuminating window into the workings of the criminal mind. Now, here's your host, Dr. Carlos.
Welcome, everyone. I have a really fun guest today. His name is Art Hushin. He's the CEO and president of the National Institute of Crime Prevention. It's a really a fun topic because it seems like a simple concept, yet it isn't, but yet it is. It's called CEPTED, Crime Prevention Through Environmental Design. It's really a fascinating concept. Sometimes I believe that a lot of people, even myself, don't realize why certain things are in places that seem kind of out of place. Maybe even Art will tell us a little bit about those big red balls at Target. What are those things doing there? Anyway, we're going to find out a whole lot more about this. Remember, if you want to support our show, share and subscribe. If you're on YouTube, hit that little bell, notification bell. If you're on our podcast, make sure to share and subscribe as well. You can catch us on Apple and Spotify, Situational Awareness Tactics, for those who are on the YouTube channel. If you're on the podcast, you can catch us at the Dr. Carlos Show on YouTube. So let's not waste any more time. Welcome to the show. Art, welcome, sir.
Well, thank you so much for the invite. I enjoy being here and looking forward to talking about CEPTED.
Likewise, this is a fascinating topic. Like I said, you're the head of the National Institute of Crime Prevention. Let's start off this way. How about you tell us what CEPTED is?
What CEPTED is? All right. Well, for the beginning, we got to go back to 1971. Criminologist by the name of C. Ray Jeffrey coined the phrase CEPTED. He came up with this idea is that to have an impact on crime, you have to design the total environment. From that point in 1971, is branched out in a variety of directions. What is the total environment? Well, it could be your home. It could be the neighborhood park. It could be your community center. It could be the school that your kids go to. But as we began to design the total environment, we began to look at concepts of good design. We get into architectural. We get into, for example, zoning codes and building design. And something as simple as just putting a light on your front porch. So again, we can go from the fundamentals of it all the way to the grand scale where cities are starting to codify and set CEPTED requirements as design standards as we begin to build our cities and build our neighborhoods. So it's a very cost-effective way in combating crime. And I really want to emphasize that. Cost-effective. It's sustainable. It's long-term. And when we look at how to apply it, the basic concepts of natural surveillance, natural access control, territorial reinforcement and maintenance, everything revolves around those concepts. Something as simple as when I'm sitting on my porch, can I see who's on the sidewalk? When I'm in the park with my kids, can I see what's taking place around me? Not only the daytime, but in the nighttime. So that goes into what type of lighting do you have? And that lighting transitions into a variety of requirements. For example, how many foot candles? What's the Kelvin temperature? What's the color rendering index? Is my light distributed in such a way that I can see what's taking place around me and then notify the police and give them that information of, for example, the color of the vehicle? We know lighting can really influence what you see based off the Kelvin temperature and color rendering. So unless we codify it, we're left up to developers to come up with these strategies and which might not meet our needs as a community.
Great point. And you highlight so many things. And I know some people use the acronym SAT, Surveillance, Access, and Territoriality. I'll try to keep it from my head that way. That's the way I have it. But don't change yours. That's just my way of structuring my questions. I'm just trying to give you a heads up. So when we go through this, great stuff too. And the lighting, you know, is it true? So I've heard some things. And folks, by the way, he's got a lot of studies to back him up. I'm telling you right now, everything has been studied extensively. Is it true, though, that a static light compared to a motion detection light? A motion detection light is actually better than a static light.
That's true. We hear a lot of comments from people in the field, crime prevention practitioners, because now we have to look at, for example, LEED buildings. We have to look at managing our resources, and that's power that goes into those lights. Even though we have LED and we're not using that much energy, still whatever we can save helps a lot. And I like the idea of the motion. So the minute something takes place, that light turns on automatically. Technology is getting so much better. You can also tie that into your camera system. So when your light goes on, all of a sudden your camera is engaged on the site. Your neighbors see that. Next thing, they start looking at their windows. And pretty soon you've got people trying to be aware of what's going on because that's not normal for your light to be on. So when it does turn on, it brings more eyes to what's taking place on your property.
That's the first concept I think we were talking about, surveillance. and how important it is, because you want people to be able to see your home. And I know it sounds almost counterintuitive to some people because they want to put up the huge barriers and the bushes and everything, but that's actually counterproductive, right?
Right. And there's a discussion about that. People like their privacy, and I understand that. You know, they take a look at their backyards, they have their bushes in the front, they trim them up really high because they don't want you to see them on the porch. And there's a balance when we work with communities. A lot of cities now have codified landscaping requirements under the SEPTED program. For example, my city, where I'm from, the city of Tampa, we follow the 2-foot, 6-foot rule for our landscaping under the SEPTED program, which means all landscaping, ground cover, not to exceed 2 feet in height, lower tree canopy, 6 foot and higher. You know, my sister city, St. Petersburg, they follow the 3-foot, 7-foot rule. What they try to do is maintain that line of sight as you approach the property or approach the school, approach the parking lot, so you can see what's taking place around you, that natural surveillance, eyes on the street. And that goes back to Jane Jacobs, the Death and Life of Great American Cities back in the 60s, where she felt you needed to design a community so you can bring those eyes out on the street, your front porches, for where you sit. Can I see my kids playing out on the sidewalk? And that is so important, that line of sight, which a lot of people refer to it, we just call it natural surveillance, to recognize and identify what's taking place. And that allows you the opportunity to respond to that. Offenders don't want to be observed. They don't want people to be looking at them as they move. And we try to maximize that as much as we can by codifying those standards.
That's amazing. I know how many burglars, I've spoken to burglars because, you know, my line of work is consulting with the psychology of the criminal. And it's interesting because when you talk to burglars, when you've seen other interviews, when you talk to cops, that's one of the first things they look at is where can I hide?
We're going to hide, exactly.
Bushes and all this stuff like that. Now, you guys also, not you guys, but the SEPTED program, and then before I lose my train of thought, that study you mentioned a minute ago, is that the same one with the high-rise buildings where they had to change, they decided to change them into like duplexes and quad and all these other types of, because they were having some issues in high-rise buildings in Chicago. Remember that study?
Right.
I remember a lot of crime in the hallways, and then they switched it to like these little duplexes or quadplexes.
Almost like pods and modular living. Something, when we talk about SEPTED, we talk about traditional neighborhood design. And that's pretty, people relate to that, architects, urban designers. What we see now in high-rises is that they're taking that floor and that is becoming your neighborhood. So you're designing that floor as you would a neighborhood. So you look at how you design your doorway. You use carpeting and color and paint to accent your property. The end unit sometimes becomes a community center where the floor will hold events there, will hold bingo night, will hold, you know, port, whatever we want to hold there. And that allows the opportunity to get to know who should or shouldn't be there. So to see traditional neighborhood design in a high rise, it's amazing because you want to create that sense of community. And a lot of times people just lock themselves up. And if you think of high-rise living in some cases, there's no need to open your door. You do not go outside unless you're taking the hallway to the elevator. This tries to change that by getting people to show that ownership. And it looks like they built little front porches by their door. They put plants up. They have a side light so they can look through and see who's in the hallway. They add colors. They have special events. And you feel like you belong to that neighborhood, which is nothing more than your high-rise floor.
How fascinating is that? And that's great. You don't have to redo it like they had to do with the other buildings when they knocked them all down.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Fascinating. I don't know. You ever see the show The Wire?
I've seen that. Yeah.
Remember, I think they actually talked about that when they had the high rise problem in Baltimore, and then they tore them all down to redesign it.
Yeah. And that, HUD was talking about getting rid of all those at some point in time. I don't think they've quite gotten there yet, but we have some in my city. I see them time and time again. And it's just a way of living that they're trying to get away from. So you see a lot of changes that we call mixed use development now, where it brings more people outside, more reason to use your front door, kind of get to know who your neighbors are. So it's not quite where it should be yet because they're still out there. And sometimes there's a lot of crime that takes place there. And it's just getting the funding to convert those into mixed use.
Awesome stuff. And we'll go back to surveillance for a minute. As we were talking about, the criminals are always looking for places to hide. But I've also heard, like, behind the bushes, especially in some kind of commercial properties, you can put things behind it and make it very uncomfortable for them to hide, little prickly things, whatever. What's your idea on that?
Oh, yeah. That's what we refer to as hostile vegetation. We just like saying that, hostile vegetation.
That sounds cool.
It adds a thorn. So a lot of times we work with architects, designers, security professionals, or if I don't want to put in a fence, I might go with some type of thorny vegetation. The downside for that is maintenance, because you got to keep it trimmed down unless what we what we call species specific. You choose a plant that has a maximum growth of 3 feet, so maintenance doesn't become an issue. But we even see some of the federal agencies now using thorny vegetation, some of the transit groups using thorny vegetation, just to create a barrier and the site doesn't look target hardened. Because we can put up really thick fencing, but you know, people are a little reluctant. What's behind the fence? Why do we have that kind of fence? Why do we have that barbed wire on the top? Instead of just thorny bushes that might serve as a barrier, you look at your lighting, you look at traditional design elements or extra that go into the site, and people don't realize it's been target hardened just by using some of the natural element and some good design strategies.
That's really the amazing thing. I mean, everything's almost incognito, even though it's right in front of your eyes. You have no idea why these things are here. And I'm sure some people are wondering, well, why did the association do this? And I wonder if it was accepted principles being applied. How about access? I know that's the other one really talk a lot about. What do you do there?
Yeah, natural access control. And again, there's confusion when we start working with our security professionals. For them, access control is target hardening. You know, I want to put a barrier in the door. I want this thick lock on it. For us, it's design elements that guide you into the entryway. So we look at pavers, we look at landscaping, we look at fencing, we look at public art, banners, because we want to eliminate all the excuses why people don't comply with the rules. You know, this is where you enter. Well, I didn't know I went this way instead, which pulls my security out. Where's this person going? Well, they got lost. They really did not know where to go. So using color, lighting, and a lot of these elements, we can guide them to exactly where they need to go to. Now, someone that's on the side of my building, I'm pretty sure they're not lost. Now I can actually treat them as a threat instead of, oh, here we go. Someone's lost again. Let's go out and bring them back to the front. So natural access control is just using all the benefits of good design to guide you to that primary entryway of your building.
It's amazing because I know you can see the herding mentality sometimes because you have this little tiny, I don't know what it is, fabric that separates you from another person. It's about 2 inches thick. That's about it. It controls hundreds of people or just file down that way. And it's such simple things like that. And also I think about Disneyland because they seem to have it pretty well dialed in how to herd people.
Oh, Disneyland is the best. As a matter of fact, they just started sending some of their people into SEPTED training for their site. So that's exciting to see. So they see the value. A lot of corporations now are getting involved with SEPTED. So it's great. Really starting to grow. And you'd be surprised here. Some of the properties that are getting involved with it. Well, for example, what's a good one? Google. We're just training at their facility in California where all their staff is being aware of SEPTED, how they use it to design buildings. Amazon is another group that sent their staff in for training. Walmart. So the list goes on and on of people focusing on good design and creating that safe environment that people feel comfortable in. But again, we can see the offender as they approach. We have those psychological barriers that are in place to either deter them or allow me the opportunity to see that and respond to it.
That's great. I mean, especially in today's world, we have so many looters and protests in certain areas. Protests aside, I mean, there's good reasons for some of them, but what happens when you take it beyond that and start destroying property, it becomes problematic. So I know we had an individual here a couple of weeks ago, actually a week ago, who was the head of Riot Glass. And so he sells shatterproof windows for businesses and homes like that. And as you mentioned, law enforcement, executive protection, those individuals look at the target hardening concept, and SEPTED doesn't get rid of it. It just adds to it, right?
Oh, exactly. It complements your physical security and your target hardening. That's why the Department of Homeland Security in 2017, in one of their research programs, all their security professionals now at the federal level must understand the concepts of SEPTED and be able to apply them, not only to prevent crime, but they're also using it for terror mitigation strategies. So again, they see the value of it. They posted it in an article, and we saw an increase in federal agents coming in to take the training that were involved with security and safety.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, that's great stuff. Let me ask you this. Before you actually build a city, I've seen some of the designs out there where people lay it out and they'll start organizing streets in certain fashions and house layouts before they actually build the homes to be able to, again, increase that field of vision between homes. Any insight on that?
Yeah, we do a lot of work with some of your traffic calming and some of your engineers that are involved. We look at grid pattern designs of street, curvilinear. Again, cul-de-sacs. So many strategies go into that. If I go with grid, I can connect, which means bicycle lanes, which means pedestrians, which means transit. Again, the more eyes I have on the street, the more positive behavior, the less opportunity for crime. So if we can design our cities with that, then it allows us the opportunity to be outdoors, use our front door, use some of the amenities that the city provides, and again, take ownership of them. When I start having, you know, cul-de-sacs, dead-end streets, blind alleyways, I don't know what's happening in them. You see the offenders start to congregate in those areas because there's no sense of ownership, no surveillance, and no one challenges them as compared to streets that are active. People take ownership. They know who the neighbors are. They have front porches. They have stoops. They have balconies. All these little things that we might not think are important, they become so important when you think about, again, that sense of community, you know, getting everyone out there.
That curved street, as you mentioned, I've seen that before as well in other trainings where what's the purpose of that curved street? Is it able to see people coming that don't belong?
Yeah, so that curvilinear design we start to looking at, again, you get that slow curve, which ties into traffic calming because you get the sense that the street is narrowing a bit, so it gets you to slow down a bit. Not everyone, but a majority of the drivers see that and they change their driving behavior a bit, but you still maintain a certain level of surveillance as you go through there and see what's taking place around you. Then you throw in your 2-foot, 6-foot rule for your landscaping. Then you throw in wider sidewalks for walkability. Then you throw in your bike lane. Then you throw in the setback of the house. Then you throw, you see where I'm going then?
No, sure.
And all of a sudden you created a community.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Beautiful, nice layout. Again, folks, this is CPTED training, CPTEDtraining.net. You can get more information. They actually offer online training. So if you can't go to Florida, I mean, if you want to go on vacation and take the training, that's great too. But if you can't, you can always do the online training as well, especially during these days right now. It's a great, great opportunity. All right. And I guess the third part is territoriality. This is interesting. What does that mean?
Yeah, territoriality comes back to ownership. Again, so how can I show this is my property? So we look at fencing, we'll look at fencing standards. So for example, in my city, retired from the Tampa Police Department, so I helped write the code. We had one of the first CPTED units in the country, which we began to codify and set these as standards. In order to have a fence in the city, it has to be decorative see-through fencing. So what happens is that when builders come in and submit the plans for review, the officers will review that and see, does that fencing meet our CPTED requirements? And they sign off on it for approval. Yes, that's the fence that they can install. So that fencing allows that surveillance, that visual connection. Now the homeowner, if they want to, they can block with landscaping. You know, we don't encourage them to do that, but some do because it's your home. You can do what you like to do. But for multifamily, parks, government quarter, schools, we keep that fence and keep the landscaping so we can see what's taking place. Cities, again, are codifying the type of materials used in order to improve that ownership. Fencing is one, public art. You know, there's a big emphasis now on public art for territorial reinforcement. It shows ownership. So you have a mural on your building, you add, for example, painted sidewalks, you have crosswalks that are painted by kids. That shows ownership, that goes back to that territorial reinforcement, even decorative fencing. You know, again, schools are putting their logo on the fence to show that's just not a fence, that belongs to Jones High School. You know, so now it's very, this is our school, our campus. Cities now are branding. You see more of that to show this belongs to the city, showing that ownership, territoriality, territorial reinforcement. And then once you bring in other residents to help, for example, with that artwork, oh, so now you've got a community tie-in. Now, you know, well, that's my cousin. He painted that mural. So now people protect that. Again, no tagging, no graffiti. This belongs to, that's Artie's kid. You know, he'll help paint that. So there, all of a sudden, you just see these little changes that start to take place. And then you also find fewer calls for police service because people begin to take ownership. And we start talking about all these programs of defunding the police. You know, what does a community do? You know, if I don't have all the officers that, well, I'm going to have to start doing things on my own. Somebody tell me what to do. Well, CPTED is one of the tools that more and more communities are using as a way to combat crime and create safe neighborhoods.
Great stuff. Great stuff. So many questions for you. So many questions. Excellent stuff. For first, by the way, thank you for your service too. I just heard that you're a police officer.
Oh, you were, thank you.
I didn't realize that. The other thing, so we talk about territoriality. So it's almost like reframing graffiti and tagging instead of the gangs having claimed territory now that the ownerships are, or the owners of the property are.
Right. And that's proven to be very successful. What they found in one of the studies done was less than 2% probability of that artwork being tagged. You know, if someone shows ownership. Now, again, we do a whole class on this. It's what that artwork is. You know, if the artwork reflects a community, again, there's some ownership. If the artwork reflects a school, again, there's some ownership. We saw some of these up in Colorado, for example, where the SEPTED officers helped repaint a trail, adding a lot of artwork from different providers. And that went almost a year and a half without anyone even tagging it. And what happened, an individual that, according to them, that was intoxicated wound up painting one of the murals because they felt they should have been involved with that. And so easy to catch because they put their initials on it and the police found them right away. So that kind of helped out. But we had to go a year and a half in an isolated area where no one tagged it or marked it. That's amazing. And people tell me, if you put up artwork, it'll get tagged. I'm like, no. The probability is so small if we show that ownership. You know, I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but it's very small when we show ownership. So well, that's what 2%? Really emphasized. The community's got to be part of it.
Was it 2% you said, or 5%?
Yeah, up to less than 2%. And again, it comes down to what the artwork is that goes up there.
Sure. Yeah, well, yeah, you're putting an opposing gang. Yeah, absolutely. Fascinating stuff. And I want to veer off in a second to ask you just personal questions, opinions on specific types of crime that I've seen when I do situational awareness training that occurs in different countries. We don't see it here as much. I just wanted to see what your take would be, or maybe advice for them. Just because we do have a lot of individuals who listen, who go to high risk operating environments. So they might go to certain countries that have a lot of issues. And yeah. I don't know, maybe you can offer some insight to them and help them out so they can help those individuals out. But before I get to that, so we got surveillance. We talked about access. We talked about territoriality. Oh, that was one of the questions too. Fencing, I hear mixed things about this. I don't know what SEPTED says in regards to fencing that you can actually see through. So, you know, if you put a big old brick wall, feels good.
But... and again, each case is different. So a good example, I was working on a property, a school, and in the neighborhood right next to them, they had a lot of gang violence, you know, shootings, gun activity. Now, this is where I put my common sense hat on. Well, I go with decorative see-through fencing when I know I have that activity right next to my school, or will I go with a 6-foot concrete block wall? I'm going to go with a 6-foot concrete block wall. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm going to recommend that, but I will soften it up with landscaping. I'll add some artwork or murals to the side. I'll at least try to show some ownership. Ultimately, safety is my biggest concern. As much as I love SEPTED and I recommend it, I also look at the big picture. You know, will someone be injured if I take this step in that direction? So I take the step back, go, no, let's go with this. And as we resolve the issues in the neighborhood, kind of work on that, then maybe in the future, we can switch over to that see-through fencing. So again, you got to look at the big picture. Some people don't.
Yeah, that's a great point. Context is really important too, I guess. Yeah, school is really different. So every operation is going to have to be looked at specifically for their needs. You have to look at the neighborhood. So if you're looking at, sometimes people wonder, oh, the liquor store, their windows are all clear. Is that really such a smart idea? But I guess it is, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When we try to do that surveillance, even some cities now are going as far as codifying that if you have a property in the city, commercial business, retail, and you have 70% transparency on your windows, you can only block 10% with advertising and screening. The other remaining 60% has to stay open for visual surveillance. And then code enforcement gets involved with that too. So cities are already taking the step in that direction because of the amount of robberies and thefts in areas of concealment. Governments had to come in and say, here's some of the changes we're going to make, and we're going to codify that to keep that, again, that visual connection so we can see what's going on in that store.
Awesome. Now, what is maintenance all about?
Maintenance, and you know, this is kind of funny we get into that, but you know, just trimming the bushes, fixing the lights. We're doing a series of workshops in Durham for the Parks Department, some of your landscape architects. And when we sent the teams out to do assessments of parks, they're having crime, they were having gang issues, things like that. When the team would come back, I'd ask them a question, how many issues in the park could have been addressed with a maintenance plan? And the largest number I got was 85%. 85%. What cities will have a tendency of doing is, well, we can't see, let's put up cameras. We can't see, let's bring in more security personnel. Well, why don't we just trim this back a bit? You know, maybe look at adding some of that lighting, maintain what we have, and have a maintenance plan so we can see as we walk in. That would eliminate almost 85% of my problems in this park with a good maintenance plan. So if I've got landscaping, I follow that 2-for-6-it rule. If I've got lights, I make sure they're all working. I don't have the tree blocking it. If I have sidewalks, I make sure they're maintained. If I have a restroom in the park, I make sure that's maintained and easily accessible to the public where they feel safe using it. So again, maintenance plays an important part. Are my cameras working? Do the locks work on my building? You know, just little things. Am I removing any graffiti on the site? So maintenance was added later for the main strategies. It was always surveillance, access control, territorial reinforcements. And slowly maintenance became such an important component. Now it's one of the, what I call the big four. You've got to maintain that natural surveillance. You've got to maintain that natural access and control. You got to maintain that territorial reinforcement. Make sure you can still see through the fence and bushes aren't blocking it. So that's why maintenance is tied into that.
I think there's even studies that show that. I remember talking to some of the burglars. They were looking for different types. If the house was maintained, they found that it was more maintained differently than what you're saying. Maintained in the sense of having a gardener, they have really nice roses, they knew they had money, and they would target those individuals, but other communities didn't. Any insight at all on that? Did you see anything in regards to that?
Yeah, and again, we see that quite a bit. There was a neighborhood in South Florida down in Fort Myers, Cape Coral. It was a gated community, and you know, people really took care of it. But once you got them beyond the gate, nobody cared. So they had a lot of home invasions. You know, they'd ring the buzzer, they'd go, who is it? Oh, pizza delivery. And they'd open the gate and let them in, you know, because people just assume no one's going to come and commit a crime here. And so they asked us what to do to help fix that. We said, well, don't open the gate. You know, let's make sure you identify who's at the gate. Just don't assume it's the pizza delivery guy. And so we see incidents like that where that ownership, but we have to take the additional steps. For example, the blinds, for example, are those open or closed? The doorway design. Can I put enough doubt in the offender so they feel like can't come in? I hate to even go this far, but you have a dog. You know, again, people have a dog in their house. And there's so many little steps. Now, can we keep all these incidents from happening? No. Can I make it a little more difficult? That I can do. So if I have two houses that are well-maintained, one has all the blinds closed, the other one doesn't, maybe the offender will go to the one with the blinds closed. Now, again, so again, I'm just trying to kind of tweak it to the point where they're not interested in my home. It's just too much of a challenge for them. I'm going to go somewhere where it's easier to get in. So I just try to take all these little steps, that motion light in the daytime. Again, how I design the front porch, access to that. Can my neighbors see, or is it blocked with landscaping so no one can see from the porch into my space? What's the setback of my house? You know, my 15-foot, 20-foot setback. Can I really magnify surveillance toward that walkway? So as the offender walks to my house, they feel vulnerable because now they're exposed, you know, all the way up to my front door. And when they're knocking, my neighbors are looking. So again, it's that big picture again, what I look at.
Absolutely. Great stuff. And folks, Art hit it right on the head too, because I remember I have videos you can follow. A friend of ours, Detect the Wolf, you can catch that on Instagram, and they'll show videos of people acting like they're deliveries. And then all of a sudden you get a kick through that door when you open the door ajar and they're coming right in. And I think a couple of them happened in New York. There's a couple in Florida, but people just acting as delivery people. And it's scary. They'll either steal some uniforms from somewhere and you get yourself a problem. All right, I guess here's the couple curveballs. We'll see how you do.
Oh, well, here we go, I'm ready.
So I know in some cities, Brazil, there's a couple of cities in Central America. They have problems with these scooter people, these scooter thieves, they call them. So people are standing on the sidewalk. And I always recommend people get away from that sidewalk, go up against the wall so the scooter people don't. And you have at least you shrunk your field of vision that you need to be observing. But any ideas there? So these guys come up to the middle of the sidewalk and they'll snag a purse, they'll snag your bag, especially tourists. They love that. Or Italy has them as well. Anything of that nature? Any ideas there?
That's a tough one. Malaysia, there was a city in Malaysia, and they were at one of our SEPTED conferences. What they did was they teamed up with SEPTED, CCTV cameras. What they also added on the sidewalk were, I don't want to say barriers, but they were kind of like railing along the main sidewalk. So as people walk there, and they provided some on-street parking. So they created a barrier between those on the scooters and those using the sidewalks. So they're trying to control the movement. And they had about a 75% reduction in crime.
Oh, wow.
Those kind of snatch and grabs and go.
That's a lot. Yeah.
again, it cost some money to do that, but they got a grant because they wanted to be a tourist area. And so they made the changes doing that. But to get that done, what is the barrier I can create? Well, on-street parking helped me do that. It could be one of the barriers I could use. So instead of it being wide open, let's provide on-street parking, which in turn ties into more retail, people parking, walking to the shop, creates a buffer between the scooter and the pedestrians. But when you have some of these larger cities where people are walking everywhere and you got traffic going through it, you got me on that one. That's a tough one.
That is a tough one.
I can do the little things, but that kind of scale, that's a real challenge.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, I know those transition points too. If you park on the street, I guess they could always just zoom up next to the guy in the car and go after them. So it becomes problematic. No, excellent stuff. But I guess you can also trap them when you have your door open. Let me ask you this in regards to, I know when I talk to guys from executive protection, one of the things they always say when you go into a new environment is watch out for those bottlenecks that happen on the street. You're driving through a town you're not familiar with. You go from a 3-lane, boom, you drop down. And that can be a problem. Any ideas there?
Well, for me, I like it for traffic calming in neighborhoods, slowing cars down. But for if you're in that kind of detail, you just got to have that lead car so far ahead to make sure there's no traffic. And hopefully they got motor officers there on the side with them to kind of keep it flowing through. But the minute something happens at that point, you're done. Go in reverse. You got the car behind you. So again, for us on the SEPTED, purely neighbor design, we like those slowing cars down, opening up, slowing down. Sometimes we refer to those as we tie that into center island narrowing. And we also tie that into mid-block crosswalks where we like being able to walk that way because it's shorter, limits the exposure the pedestrian has to a moving car, but it creates that big bottleneck for traffic or if you're trying to move someone through quickly. So, good design and safety. And then you look at getting someone through. I'd probably stick to the freeway just so I could get through faster.
That's good advice. Yeah, it's hard. You can't cover everything, that's for sure. So I guess in our last couple of minutes here together, again, thank you so much for doing this, Art. Great stuff. Tell us a bit about your program, what you offer, and who does it help?
Right. Well, we started the program back in 1999. At the time, I was still with the police department assigned to the Special Operations Bureau. And what we did was SEPTED. And as we began to grow, we began working with the state of Florida through the governor's office. And the governor, the attorney general said, let's have this designation. So I had a chance to work with them on creating it, the curriculum, writing the test for that, which is pretty standard now in this state. If you're within law enforcement and you're going to move into community affairs, crime prevention, they require you to take this training. Now we've codified it. There's currently, 66 cities in Florida that have codified SEPTED to some degree. So now we see the architects taking it. We see the urban designers taking it, the park designers taking it. And then you have to maintain that. I had the opportunity to bring it out of state because the state of Florida does not train outside of Florida. So we began doing the same training in Georgia, but under the NIC umbrella, our company. Next thing you know, we're moving into Texas. We're moving up into South Carolina. Now we spend a lot of time in California doing the training. This is California Post certified training. So again, everyone wants to earn this designation, which has become the standard for training. The American Institute of Architects, you earn 40 CEUs for taking the training.
Oh, wow.
So again, it's valued by the design professionals too. As it continued to grow, we created the designation probably about 10 years ago because people were taking training and no one was saying, here's the expectation, here's the level. And so we felt it was important to continue our work in Florida outside. So this is post-certified, for example, in Arizona, Colorado, Washington State, Oregon,
post-certified.
Oklahoma, Missouri. Again, this is really, really taken off because people, again, it's one of those tools that it's just not for police. Your code enforcement gets involved with this. Your community groups get involved with this. Your school districts, your local PTA, your community centers, your neighborhood watch groups,
wow,
corporations get involved with it too. And so we've been doing this for some time now. We have a great base of alumni from a variety of fields, all the way from mayors and city council members to you name it. And it's just been going really well. COVID-19 forced us into creating the online course. We weren't planning on doing that, but people still wanted to learn and get involved with the program. So we took that 2 months, designed the program, put it together, teamed up with a company, and now we have it online. We're just adding another course later today online too, called SEPTED and Communities. So again, it's, you still earn the designation, 64 hours of training, 2 written exams, 1 graded field assessment. To earn that, even online, you still have to do the same thing you would as you're in the classroom. That's presented back, it's maintained, and then every 4 years you got to maintain that by taking 16 hours of additional training. So refresher training, we call it.
So these trainers would actually be able to work with police departments.
Oh, yes. We actually have a lot that team up with police departments or architectural firms, because a lot of times they bid, for example, on schools, it's required that a member of that design team, someone on that team, be certified in SEPTED. Even just a bid on the program. The state of Virginia just mandated by state statute that if you're working on a school, a member of that design team must have knowledge and the ability to use SEPTED and then be involved with what they call a school safety charrettes to make sure they're in compliance with the recommendations for the site. And that was by state statute. And a lot of cities have it through city ordinance. So again, it's really, really starting to take root, so to speak. Europeans have been doing it for some time. The British have been doing it for some time. The U.S., we invented it. We just haven't codified it at a national level as they have in Europe and the U.K.
So this is, when somebody gets your program, let's say I go through the program, I get certified with SEPTED. You guys offer additional consulting if we need help, if we're on, I have no idea about this one, Art.
We do. We have what we call our SEPTED library. You have full access to that, from research, data, sample reports, templates, the most current information on SEPTED. We have social media pages, which are made up of SEPTED practitioners. So if you got a question, you get on the platform, say, hey, I'm working on a parking structure. We've had break-ins. Can someone help me, or someone done something similar? So we reach out to each other. We have a network of CPDs or professional SEPTED designations, where if firms contact us, they go, do you have anyone in the state of Kansas who's certified as SEPTED that can work with us on this project? Yes, here's a list of 25. What are you looking for? Then we contact you and say, are you interested in being involved with the project? So we put you in touch with that design team. So for us, it's all about networking and spreading the word, getting everyone involved. Because unless we do it ourselves, I'm not sure the federal government do it, but at least the cities are starting to set the standards. And now we see the design professionals realizing there's value in this. If I'm an architectural firm bidding on a school, if I can go in and say, my 5 architects are certified in SEPTED, they're not, I'm going to take you guys because you know about good design and safety. So I'm going to bring you into the loop instead. So they use it for marketing, and it's understandable, but the ultimate goal is to design a safe learning environment for kids, and SEPTED helps them do that.
Great stuff. Even if you're a civilian out there, folks, you're looking for something, you're interested in the criminal justice field, great opportunities, especially right now with the environment that we're in. I'm sure there's going to be plenty of work for SEPTED individuals. By the way, folks, too, if you're retired law enforcement, you're out of the military, you're Navy SEAL Special Ops, you have additional skills that you can bring along to SEPTED that you can really definitely add to it. So I highly recommend it. Again, folks, you can find more information about it at septedtraining.net. SEPTED is CPTED. All right, I could have you here all day. Too much fun. Too much fun. Any last words you want to tell the audience?
And again, the more people that get involved, the more we can really explain it, because it is so cost effective. Yeah, and that's what I try to emphasize over and over and over again. This is the most cost effective way in creating safe environments and safe neighborhoods. And it's sustainable. We can change it. We can tweak it. We can codify it. We can set it to design standard. We can make it mandatory, voluntary. It allows the community to have so much input. The commercial property owners have so much input on what it will look like, and just gives them the opportunity to pick what they think would work best for them.
Great stuff. Great stuff, folks. I want to check out the training program myself. So I highly recommend you do. Remember, if you want to support our podcast, share and subscribe. We truly appreciate it. Thanks again, Art, for being here and for all your help too, keeping us safe.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. We'll catch you all next time.